The next speaker, I'm happy to introduce. He just got off a plane, I think. Ahmed Shaki, he is the editor of the International Socialist Review, and he's going to be our last speaker. Here he is.
Thank you. The chair was being quite polite. I just waltzed in an hour and 5 minutes late, but yes, it was off of an airplane. It was a stultifying experience of 5 hours sitting, waiting for the airplane to take off, but I'm not sure which was more stultifying, today's experience or last night's experience watching the debate. And one is the result of deregulation in the airline industry. The other one is a deregulation in the meaning of politics. And I want to start with that, that the first thing that the Nader campaign, that a vote for Nader, that building Nader groups, that getting the vote out for Nader should do is reestablish some sense of what politics is about or what politics should be. Who gets what, where, when, and how? And you want to look at the two candidates last night. We know what they got, we know where they got it, and we know how they got it. I was reading a book on the plane. Now you really want to know why it was stultifying. The book is called Is Our Children Learning? Which is a direct quote, written, by the way, by a unabashed Clinton-Gore advisor, who himself, we can talk about the Gore side later, but this is amongst the kind of thoughts that come out on the campaign trail. I was raised in the West of Texas. It's pretty close to California, in more ways than Washington, D.C. is close to California. I didn't do it in 88. I never have. Maybe I should. George W. on the party's platform. You can go on and on and on with platitudes of this kind. The problem with the kind of book is that it obscures that Gore says the same kinds of platitudes. And when you strip it all away, when I say bring some meaning back to politics, is there's a notion that voting for somebody in this country means only voting for the winner. That a vote for Nader is somehow a vote thrown away. That political activity, which doesn't result in seizure of the reins of the White House, is a waste of time. Politics has been turned on its head in this country. A vote, political activity, ought to be above all based on some idea of political principle, of belief, of genuine belief in justice, in equality, in anti-racism, in some kind of political program. That's where I was taught politics was about, including in my American civics class. I didn't really have one. I grew up in Egypt, but I'm, you know, the equivalent thereof, the Egyptian civics class, leaving that aside. But I'm trying to make a point here really about what it is that we're involved in and to cut through some of the kind of layers of talk and of hypocrisy. American politics is hypocrisy to the nth degree. And what this campaign is providing a basis for is returning politics, real politics, into people's hands. And above all, being able to say a vote for something that a vote that I am casting is an expression of support for this position or for that position. And if we don't win it now, we will fight for it we will continue to fight for that, which is really the basics of what politics ought to be, to stake out a position and to fight for it. And I think that the position that we've staked out in the Nader campaign is not a socialist position. I'm a socialist. I edit a socialist magazine. But in terms of where American politics is at, can help catapult American politics to the left in a way that we haven't seen in years. And that is not only because of the reality of the political campaign, but have a look on the ground. I live in the city of Chicago. They organized, and they meaning the Nader groups in town and the Nader 2000 campaign, of which we're very active, but many hundreds of other people are involved, the Green Party's involved, many dozens of groups were involved. 10,000 people came on 2 weeks' notice to come and see Ralph Nader. That represents something both about what Nader is, that is, opposition to the death penalty, unlike both candidates, support for labor, unlike both major candidates, support for women's right to choose, unlike the compromised record of one and the terrible record of the other. But it also is more than about Nader. It means that in the same way as American politics has closed down, has become the parties of Tweedledee and Tweedledum, so close together that you can barely make the difference, that has had an impact on a much wider layer of people. Not just young people, and I'll start first with the older generation. The hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people in this country who bought into the American dream, who have seen a 9-year expansion go in one direction, the benefits of a 9-year expansion go in one direction with much less coming to them, or for those hundreds of thousands of union workers who brought Clinton and Gore to office, who in the main will still vote for Clinton and Gore today, but do so with hesitancy, with anger, and with bitterness, because they've watched NAFTA, the permanent replacement bill, a whole number of promises made, become promises broken. The Nader campaign gives voice to that kind of discontent. It also represents the coming together of larger groups of people who are beginning to question all kinds of aspects, not only of the twin party system, but of American society itself. And that's why, really, in terms of what I would say in a meeting like this, and the points to make, really, I think, are elementary. First, the task is still to get out the biggest vote possible for Nader and to build campaigns and committees and a movement that opposes the twin party system in this country, not only for this election, but for elections in the future. Number two, that Nader himself has come to the conclusion, just by watching who turns out to these rallies, that the movement, or the burgeoning movement, the movement in embryo, if you want to call it that, is not going to end November 7th. Which means that we will be faced as activists, as collaborators, as people who have worked together on this campaign, with a question of where does the movement go next, of even identifying and defining that movement and what its tasks should be. And it's a very early stage in the movement. For people who've gone back, and I apologize for having missed the previous speakers, if people talked about the civil rights movements, movements are created not by some plan or by some declaration, but are created by people who actually involve themselves and shape that movement. We are in the process of involving ourselves and of shaping a movement which promises not only to change the picture of the American landscape on November 7th, because I think that the vote, the turnout itself, and the vote totals will put a lie to the idea that third-party politics is an impossibility, you can't be a serious contender outside of the two mainstreams, but also that this movement does not see elections solely as its vehicle, but rather saw the Nader campaign as a key opportunity to expose the weaknesses of the system and needs to move forward as an active living movement beyond the elections. And by the way, there are many, many fronts on which such a movement will involve itself. From racial profiling in Washington, the demonstration in Washington, D.C., which I had the opportunity to attend, to the question of union rights, to the question of workers' rights, to the question someone raised, Michael Moore raised at the big mass rally. Michael Moore, the maker of, yeah, people know who he is, yes. Okay. I suppose the maker of the film on Flint, the documentary on Flint, raised the question at the super rally. I just have to repeat, it was such a great line. He read in Rolling Stone somewhere that George W. Bush could name the last 55 people from his fraternity. And he said, I would want to ask him one question in the debate. Can you name the last 55 people you've killed? Meaning, what I'm driving at in terms of movement is the movement against the death penalty. A range of struggles which raise the question of power, which raised the question of priorities, which raised the question of the character of the system that we live in. I believe that that leads one to socialist conclusions, but I don't believe that everyone will agree with me on that at the beginning process, nor even necessarily at the end, but that we have a responsibility to bring politics back, and that means ideas, discussion, both about the nuts and bolts, which are very important to our daily lives, in terms of organizing, and the question of the inspiration for the future. And that movement is on the ground in a way that we don't even understand yet. You see glimpses of it. 20,000 or 30,000 people in Washington, D.C. against racial profiling, walking into the UIC pavilion, a place where you see basketball games generally, and feeling, I got scared of heights. That's how I react to mass movements. 10,000 people, I'm on the third row up top, I said, I can't take this. Too many people. I had to go and sit on the ground floor. Not as good a view, but no one could have told me 6 months ago, 10,000 people, that I would be sitting on the third floor up of a huge stadium with 10,000 other people cheering to what are effectively politics of protest, politics that go up against the present system. And really it brings us back, or brings me back, to one simple lesson, which I'll quote Frederick Douglass, I always do, who says it better, I think said it better than anyone else, about the character of the kind of movement we want to build and where we find ourselves. The whole history of progress of human liberty shows that all concessions yet made at her august claims have been born of earnest struggle. If there is no struggle, there is no progress. Those who profess to favor freedom and yet deprecate agitation are men who want crops without plowing up the ground. They want rain without thunder and lightning. They want the ocean without the awful roar of its mighty waters. The struggle may be a moral one, or it may be a physical one, and it may be both moral and physical, but it must be a struggle. Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did, and it never will. That is truer today of this American monstrosity, and I mean of what we have in government and of what runs the corporations in this country and what is attempting to dominate the world and set a global agenda, one that I think is against the interests of Americans and certainly against the interests of the world's workers and the poor, and that is a movement worth building.